You're listening to the We Speak Common podcast network. For more information and to support the show, head to wespeakcommon.com.
Hello and welcome to this episode of Tinkerer's Toolbox, brought to you in partnership with the Dice Dungeon and Describe, your UK-based provider for all things Dungeons & Dragons, from dice to books to rolling trays and bags, and the professional creative writers there to make your games all that more immersive with written box text and, of course, their audio library. Both of those guys are down in the show notes below. You can follow their links to the websites and find the discount codes to get 10% off your goings-on, your dirty dealings with them. And, of course, at some point, we'll talk about what they've got going on a little bit later on in the episode. This week, I'm joined by Dave to talk about delivering lore in your games. Not just sitting there and telling them what the notebook says, but actually reading out the lost long notes of the company of the Yellow Banner. Welcome to We Speak Common. And hello, Dave.
Hi, Ben.
How are you, my friend?
I'm okay, how are you?
Yeah, I'm good. I am falling apart.
Yeah.
I think we were just talking about that. I think this is what getting old is meant to feel like. Yeah. And I know that you and many others will go, mm-hmm. Shut up, Ben, you're not old. because you are actually an old man.
I am fully over the age of 29, so officially old.
whereas I am not that old. I'm still young, spry, fit, and gorgeous. But I've been away and I came back. And typically, like when you go away and you relax, and your body then goes, ah, cool, you've got time to be ill. Well, I went away and I don't relax on my holidays. I have very active holidays. I explore the world and shit like that. Hashtag millennial. And then I know.
Wow.
And then I've come back. I had 3 days where all I did was like sort my life out, like, you know, did laundry and stuff. And in that time, my body's gone. Have a couple spots. Hey, your lips are cracked. What's that? You want to breathe? Now we're going to clog your nose up. So
what a fun time.
Like, yeah, I feel like I'm falling apart. So I might be sniffing and like making those kind of noises all episode. But otherwise, apart from that, I'm really, really good.
Probably still less background noise than Tavern Talk.
No, less background noise than Tavern Talk episode one.
It's because all been this fixed is new now, improved microphone.
New and
Dave.
Improved. Yeah. How are you finding it? You're on a show now.
I'm on a show. It's great. Mm.
Sorry, let's rephrase that. You're not on a show. You have a show.
I am on the show. Oh, sorry,
you're on
no.
The show. Oh, I agreed. I said it too. That's not good. Oh, you just made me. You made my audio peak. You really got me there. Here I was getting ready for the episode. I was like, perfect distance from the mic. All the metering's right. The mastering's good. And then you've made me shout. How is it? How's it going?
Yeah, good. Good.
If you want to complain about Chris, you can do that.
I mean,
it's just you and me.
I'm gonna just say that. Chris, we agreed to do two episodes and I had to drink two drinks and I got intoxicated on that call. So I blame you entirely for episode two being me being probably tipsy.
If you haven't listened to episode two of Tavern Talk yet, there was a point where I was editing it because I edit the episodes and I had... I think we were on Discord.
We were on Discord call, yeah.
And I was like, Dave, just stop talking for a second. I've got you in both ears. And I was like editing away. And I was like, yeah, go on, what were you saying? And I said to you at the end, I was like, you were pissed at the end of this episode, weren't you? He was like, yeah, I was. I was like, yeah, I can tell. You'd had a little bit too much.
I had two cocktails and they were strong cocktails as well. So
I'm... Yeah. Very excited for my appearance on this show. When's it happening?
Yes.
Is it
soon? I think we're gonna get you on.
I thought you were gonna joke about not having me on.
So you're not on episode three. I think we're gonna get you on for episode 4 and 5.
Oh, back
possibly.
To back.
Back to back episode.
Are we gonna record them back to back so that we get hammered?
We are, I think. So
fuck yeah.
We've got your favorite drink in there, which is gonna we've renamed Dirty Lich Water. No, yep. Minty Lich Water, not Dirty Lich Water.
Minty. I don't drink that.
Interesting. And then I don't think we've decided on a second drink yet. What would Kalath's favourite drink be?
Oh, Oh, it's absolutely an espresso martini.
Okay, espresso martini it is. Horrendously, just probably going to record in the evening and I'm not going to sleep that night, but it's fine.
I cannot wait. This is going to be so good. I'm so excited. Okay, well, that's enough talking
anyway,
about
this. Anyway.
Apart from that, how are you? How's your D&D
I'm good.
Life at the moment?
So we had a really good session last... No. Where are we? What day is it? Sunday, I had a really good session.
Okay, good. Okay. That works. That's timeless.
Which was... we did a little character intro one-shot, which was traumatizing for everyone involved. So just a usual Dave game, really. You know?
Yeah.
Trauma, horror, scary things. Mind flares. People turning into mind flares.
Seramorphosis.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, we should do a little episode on that one day.
Oh, hell yes.
That is scary. Are you down for that?
Yeah, definitely.
Cool, because that's very Lovecraftian. That's very much your thing.
Yeah. So
okay, I'll get it.
Anyway, flying ships.
Yep.
It was very Spelljammer. You probably would have really enjoyed it.
Probably, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe.
There's... Yeah, I mean, we had a really good session in our game as well, didn't we? Because we had a week off.
That session was amazing. Last session, I really, really enjoyed last session.
Really? Thank you, man. So it's been nearly a full 2 weeks since we played. So we're playing tomorrow on the day that we're recording.
So exciting.
I cannot wait.
I'm so nervous. I'm so excited at the same time.
Playing Tomb of Annihilation and you guys have finally finished Act 2 and are starting Act 3, which means tomorrow night you finally enter the Tomb of the Nine Gods.
So scared.
Oh, you're going to die.
I'm so scared.
What was it that freaked you out the most, though? Was it the fact that I told you that, like, hey, just a reminder, you're going into the tomb, take things slowly, breathe, relax? Or was it the message I sent the other day on the Discord?
I think it was the message saying you probably need a new character just in case. And I'm just like, okay, great. That sounds fantastic.
I'm not saying go and roll up a new character. I'm not saying fall in love with a new concept.
Just have
a race and a class and be able to roll it up in 20 minutes.
And I've already done it all. You know this. I've already made a full backstory for him.
Have you got it ready to go?
Yeah.
Have you built it? Have you made it?
Yeah, I've made the character. I've made the sheet. I just haven't written anything in there because I'm not doing that because I would be like, well, Cassius, you can jump into a hole.
That's why I don't make like extra characters. That's why I don't do it. I'm very excited. I'm very, very excited. I went to go and look at my DM notes for the team. As everyone who, if you're a long-time listener of the show, you know I do all the work up front. I rewrite the modules. So I opened up my D&D prep for Tomb and I scrolled down to the Tomb of the Nine Gods and it is one page long.
Can I just say as well, you can get that if you join the Patreon.
You can download the Tomb of Annihilation DM doc. Oh, obviously there's stuff in there that's relevant to my campaign and obviously the campaign's been going on for 3 years, so a lot of it's outdated to what's actually happening in the story. Dave wasn't even part of the campaign when the document was written. Actually, I'm going to go and I'm opening it up now. I'm going to go to the, where is it? Exploration Days, Ominous Sights and Sounds, Exploring the Ruins. I love how I've got a chapter called If the Characters Win. It's not going to happen.
Rude.
It's not. Here you go. Tomb of the Nine Gods, the opening chapter, the opening paragraph of this one page of prep, which basically means I've decided I'm going to keep the tomb as it's written, pretty much, is let's not beat around the bush. This dungeon is deadly.
Yeah, great.
So great. They're like, I think the minimum damage I've seen traps dealing in the first three levels is like 10d8. So it's good. It's good stuff. It's good stuff.
Great.
Basically, if you die within this, like the first 10 minutes of a session, I want you to be able to roll up another character so you don't just sit there twiddling your thumbs.
Yeah, then I'd cry about that.
That's why it's a message.
I was thinking the other day because of all this you've caused, and this is going to, we're ruining this episode already because we're going off massively off target three times in a row already.
No, it's fine. We're only 10 minutes in.
So I've been thinking, like, because you've like, tweaks that brain of mine now thinking, oh my god, what if Cassius dies? I'm thinking how I can traumatize you as Kalath in that moment of death. So I'm thinking, like, I think I'm gonna have like a little death scene if I do die, just like calling Kalath and just be like, well, you did this to me, basically, and just like, having a horrendous moment.
I mean, this is great. I mean, I'm all for that, and I would love the emotional baggage that gives Kai, if it gives any. Mm-hmm. Because you are basically just his boy toy. But
yeah, I know.
There are scenarios where you just get turned to dust. So you might, I mean, don't hold on to that too tightly.
I know. I'm aware of horrible things that could probably happen to me.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's going to be great.
Instant death and stuff like that, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, not too instant. It will hurt, but I'm looking forward to it. I'm really looking forward to it.
I'm horrified because I like Keldrex. And for people who don't know, Keldrex got murdered in Tyranny.
He didn't really get murdered. He was just left to die.
Left to die. So that was horrifying enough. And Keldrex is my second favorite character. So
is Cassius your first?
Cassius is definitely my favorite character. I love playing Cassius.
That's a really heartwarming idea that your favorite character is linked to my favorite character.
Yeah, and it's lovely.
Character bros.
However, the fear that comes with going into a tomb with your favorite character is horrifying. And like just thinking of all the terrible things that could happen to him in there is very, very scary. And there's a little part of me that wants to just go to the group and go, because Cassius would feel like completely overwhelmed because he is out of his depth in this scenario and he's a little city boy. He's going into a jungle that's full of traps. He is massively out of his depth, but he plays it off like he's not.
Yeah.
Right?
I can't tell you how excited I am. I've been listening to like someone else run the tomb just to hear how normal people will deal with the traps. Mm-hmm. I've been reading it over and over again. I read it. I had a 2.5 hour flight last Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
And I got on the plane, and before we'd even taxied up the runway, I'd opened the book on my phone, and I didn't stop reading until we hit the ground back in the UK.
Nice.
So I didn't read the whole chapter. Like over it. It's big. Yeah. So yeah, I'm so excited.
Because tomb, and then there's the final bit, right? I'm assuming there's stuff after that as well.
Yeah, so there's when you get to the climax and you get to, you know, the soulmonger, as it were, and you have that encounter.
Yeah.
If you live, there are, you know, rooms after.
Whoa, okay, cool.
And there's not many, but there's some. There's also, you know, the whole thing of the campaign continues, doesn't it?
Yeah, we're continuing it anyway, yeah. Which is very exciting still.
Yeah, it's gonna be really good. There's a lot in that tomb.
Yeah.
That like, and there's one thing specifically in that tomb that I'm not gonna say too much about because it's still a secret for you.
Yeah.
That has a lot of like in-game, in-world kind of lore, right? It's a thing. Cool. Like here's this specific thing, but there's no like pre-designed, here's how you tell the players about it, here's how you foreshadow it. And I don't want to get to the point. Yeah, like the Tomb of the Nine Gods. So if you played TOA, Dave, obviously this will make sense to you. You have to collect the nine puzzle cubes of the nine tricks to gods.
Yeah.
And you have to use them to get into the tomb. And as you're walking around Omu, you are supposed to learn about the story of the nine tricks to gods.
Yeah.
They're represented by different animals, and like there's nine of them, and out of all of them, there's the flail snail is the one that doesn't hate one of the others. The others all have rivalries.
Yeah.
And so you're meant to like learn about these rivalries because it's kind of like a
Well, it helps you with the trials and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. And it helps you with the trials. But in the book, it just says something along the lines of, as the players are exploring Omu, they'll learn about the story of the nine gods. And it's like, where?
Yeah, tell me where.
You haven't told me. So you kind of left to do it. And so it's tricky. And it got me thinking, there's lots of other stuff in this adventure and in the campaigns that I run that I want to espouse to the characters, not the players.
Yes.
So, you know, it would be really boring if Ben the DM went, okay, Dave, here's the story of the nine tricks to gods. One of them got up and did this, and the other one hated it, and so he did this.
Mm-hmm.
And then these two fought because of this.
Yeah.
That's boring. What's more interesting is you finding secret messages and little bits of Omuan and guides telling you bits and bobs here and there. And so we're talking about that today. We're talking about how you deliver that lore.
So on that note, we did a fun thing together as my first character introduction, which I think we both planned as a temporary character, but was much more temporary than we thought. was...
Hang on. Don't tell me. I'm going to try and make my memory work, because my memory's going really bad. Who was your first character?
Wow. This is outrageous.
My memory is so bad. This is why I don't have a girlfriend anymore. it's not. It's one of the reasons. my memory is so bad. So I didn't forget anniversaries or anything. I just forget what we said.
What character did I join the game with?
It was a fighter?
It was part fighter.
Oh, yeah, because you're a weird multi-class. Did they die?
He got turned to stone.
Oh, Vaughn.
Thorn, yeah. Yes. So we did the fun thing where...
Fuck me, how did I not remember that?
Wow, yeah. You basically made that character as well, so I just made the twisty things. So we did a really fun thing with that, where you can provide a character information that they would be aware of, and they can disperse that information as the character, knowing that.
Okay, so I've got another really good example of this as well. We'll talk about both examples, and this is one of the ways. So, so way one, how do you give out lore in world? Let your players do it, and that can be tricky. So Vaughn is in TOA is a shield guardian who is in the jungles of Chult somewhere, and its command amulet, which is on a necklace, is being worn by a goblin, a queen Grubsnab, I think her name is, of Urbitiri goblin. Tribe, and if the players find the amulet and they find Vaughn, they can work it out and they can bring him aside. They get a shield guardian. Yay, we've got a companion. Woohoo! In our game, the players never went there. They never met Queen Grubsnab. They met Batiri, and one of the players for a short time played one of the goblins from that tribe. There's another example of it, and I told him, hey, you pray to this thing called Vaughn. This is where he is in the jungle. This is what he looks like. Your queen wears a signet of him, like an amulet of him. So Ray played this character that had all this info and kind of like spoke about it. And all the characters were like, what a weird backstory, and ignored it.
Yeah.
And I actually bet none of them have said, oh, that's the one that Backstab liked. Like, that's the goblin.
Yeah.
and I think if they're listening to this now, they're going to go, oh, shit. Because they...
Yeah, we never really spoke about it. I just dropped like little hints here and there about goblins liking me and stuff.
So Vaughn, the shield guardian, is praised by a local tribe of goblins, I think Grung
and Vegapygmies. Yeah.
And I always said, whenever a person died, a player died in the game, I always said to them, okay, do you have a character or do you want one? Because I can give you a couple of pre-baked ideas I have, because I had some knowing that the campaign was going to be deadly.
Yeah.
And Vaughn was one of them and no one ever took it. And so when you joined, I said, okay, do you want to do this? So we made Vaughn a playable character.
Yep.
Which is the only Warforged we've had in Faerun up to this point.
Yes.
And because Shield Guardian Warforged made sense. And we took the backstory from the book and we built on it and created a more fuller fledged
Fleshed
thing
it out.
To run
yeah.
with. We gave him a class and all that kind of stuff. And you came in and you had all this knowledge about like the jungles and what had been happening here over the last 100 years, because you'd been here for the last 100 years.
Exactly, yeah.
Insane. And then you got turned to stone and no one...
It was very sad.
I love about it. The other one I had was when Wes first started playing a character called Ozzily.
Mm-hmm.
Ozzily was his second character in TOA.
Yep.
Is his second character, I should say.
Interesting.
Because he played Nevin, who died, and he played Ozzily, then Nevin came back to life. Now he's playing both of them. He's got to pick one. Yeah, pick your favorite child. He is a Cholton. He's a local, so he's a guide. Yeah. So I said to Wes, okay, look, here's the stuff you know about Port Narenzayu and about Cholt and its history. And I just gave him like a document of info. And
Wes
eats that stuff up because he loves role playing. So I knew it was in safe hands. And it got to the point where they came to, there's a, like a, not a tomb, not a shrine, like a mix of the two, a mini dungeon that looks like a man with a crocodile on his shoulders. Anyone who's played TOA will know it. It's quite a prevalent one. I think everyone goes to it, basically. Or like most common routes go that
way. It's like quite crucial to the storyline kind of thing. Or...
It depends on what route you take.
Okay.
It's in a location where the Order of the Gauntlet are, and it's down the river.
Okay.
It's like one of those places that you're more likely to go to.
Yeah.
And it's a cool little dungeon, and it's one I think everyone should check out. It's got a cool solution. But in the box text for it in the book. Like the DM is like, oh, have a guide, tell the story. I just sent the story to Wes. He was like, can I do a history check? Yeah. I was like, yeah, what'd you get? And he got a really high roll and he didn't need a big one anyway because he's Cholton. So I was like, cool. Sent him the story privately and went, here it is. And he just spoke it out and role played out all this lore for the game as if he'd known it the whole time, which was...
That's awesome.
Like great and immersive and a lot of fun for me to just sit back and listen to and watch.
Yeah. That is really cool.
So I mean, if you've got players that you can trust to do it justice, go for it. Especially little bits like that. Like this was just the story of the Man and the Crocodile, which is an old fable to the Choltons. It wasn't like game crucial knowledge. There were clues in it on how to beat the dungeon. But
I think that as a player, when another player tells you something, for me, makes it much more immersive.
Mm-hmm. I agree, because it's like, oh, they've got all this knowledge and this backstory that I don't know about, which means they must not know all about my backstory and my knowledge, which makes it more fun because you're a group playing together, trying to achieve the same goals, but you all know different things. Like that's more fun than just being like, that's why I don't ever like when people suggest in session zeros, I shouldn't say don't always like, because sometimes I think it does work, but when it's like, oh, let's all build our characters together and write our backstories together. I'm like, no,
I like
want
it
to
sometimes.
Learn about you.
Where here and there, there's like a couple of people that are together or like little mini groups within the group.
Yeah, like two characters are related. Like,
yeah.
Cool.
But this is the fun thing as well, where you have two separate characters, but they're from a similar place. Like with me and Ray's character, Wolfgang, we're both from Baldur's Gate, so we both know the city. We both led very different lives there from two different classes, as in like I'm noble and he was like lowborn. And then raised up the ranks up until this like commander position. And he's like, Wolfgang is very intrigued by Cassius's life and he wants to know more and more stuff about it.
I really want to see more roleplay between Wolfgang and Cassius.
Yeah.
And I would love to hear, because Wolfgang's not been in Baldur's Gate for a while.
Yeah.
It's been like 4 months now. And I would say Kla'ath and the Return of Eltrail was probably only a month and a half, maybe 2 months at max he left.
He
Kla'ath hasn't been a duke that long. When Wolfgang left, there was the Archduke, this new duke, Kla'ath, and two open positions. There were refugees everywhere. Like, it's a completely different city to what it is now. So it'd be really interesting to hear them talk about, like, the political state of home and stuff like that. That would just be like, this is such boring shit that, like, I want to go slay my dragons. What are you talking about, political homes?
No. But that's, like, Cassius's, like, whole deal. He is a politician, and he's, like, not a good person. He's like a very nasty, manipulative person deep down, which is very fun. Which the group hasn't really seen.
Yeah. And the complete opposite of Kla'ath, who is his patron effectively, a really good person who does bad things for good reasons.
Yeah. Cassie's the opposite. He will do anything to get what he wants, which is very fun. Yeah.
Okay. So let's talk about another way of delivering lore in world. Then there's the classic. You find a journal.
Yes. Which is always fun. But
no.
You don't
it's
like
not.
It? This is where I disagree in some respects, because say if you find... So I agree, yes, it is boring compared to other ways of doing it. But if it's like a really niche thing and you just find this like weird little creepy journal, it's just like...
Let me tell you...
Random fucked up shit.
For why I hate this method.
Okay. Tell me more.
If I am deciding, like if it's my adventure, it's my homebrew, I'm making it, whatever, and I decide you're going to find a journal, then I am committing myself to writing out that journal.
Mm-hmm. Yes, correct.
If I pick up a module and it says, they find a journal, and then it doesn't give me the written journal pages written in world, I'm like, well, that's a whole load of work that I've now got to fucking do that I didn't want to do. And I don't like being forced to do that work. I have to be in the mood to write. You know, I've got to get in the mind of the writer. I've got to like work out what they know, what they don't know, work out what's important for characters, like write it all out. So that's why I don't like it.
That makes sense.
I do think it is a good way of doing it if you're going to give your players a written journal and they can read it and read it out loud to the other players.
See, what it is for me, I love making props.
Now, I'll agree with you there. I have done that. There have been times when I've been like, you find a letter and I've written the letter and I give it to them and it's tea stained and it's got a wax seal. And I love that stuff. But we play mostly online, Dave.
Yeah, I know. It's just my little fancy of playing.
The little craft.
I know.
Oh, I've been there.
I know.
I get it. I've been a part of that life.
You know what I enjoy though, delivering lore-wise, is that, well, the best way I think about it is law, think of law as history, which it technically is, right? It's, law is the history of the world in general and things you know about the world. If you look at the real world, there is history everywhere. No matter where you are, there will be some form of history associated with that area and just visible to you. Whether that's a street, you know, on that street, especially, I don't know, like in the UK anyway, there are like plaques on walls. There are street names that have history. Mm-hmm. There are parks that have strange names. There's everything. You will be able to find lore anywhere. And I think of that in D&D. So anywhere you go in D&D, especially in a fantasy world, there will be lore just around you. And if a player's looking for it, they'll find it.
Yeah, and it's about using that and becoming clever in how you use that. So,
yes,
you know, if you're in the ruins of an old city, there's frescoes and memorials and things that depict a story. And you see a piece of art that shows two bears fighting, and then you see a piece of art that has a dragon swooping down, and you go, oh, it looks like this was a colony of bear people that were killed by a dragon. Like, if they don't get it, you can then tell them, but you've delivered it in the world, you know?
Yeah.
Another really good example of that would be, just like other NPCs, like other characters and other people. They all do. They all live their lives, right? They've all got these fantasy lives that we are kind of putting on show for the players while they're there in front of them.
Yeah,
they're looking at that chunk where that NPC is. We're generating that image in front of them. What does their life look like? Okay, well, it's a blacksmith who, you know, gets up, does his blacksmithing, and then goes to the fish market on a Tuesday. Great. Mm-hmm. Why does he do it that way? Why does he do what he does? There's reasons, right? Give it reasoning.
Exactly.
And then show through their actions, describe an NPC's actions and what they're doing, and players will start to pick that up. So okay, blacksmith's a bad example, but let's say it's they're walking through a city and they see a church they recognize to a god, right?
Yeah.
And a bell rings and it's the equivalent of Sunday morning. And everyone comes running out and starts praying or starts filing in for the church and going in. And they all start, you're going for worship, going for mass or whatever. And the players witness this and they're like, oh, okay, so this is a really religious like city. This is a really religious town. And they start to get that idea. Okay, well, now they've got the lore that X town in the middle of whatever region is super religious for this god that this church is for. And they've got that in the back of their mind. And later you can use that. So when the players go and talk to someone, they can say, oh, you know, Tyr praise you. How are you, traveler? Like they start incorporating it in their speech. Maybe they're wearing holy symbols, the equivalent of wearing like a Christianity cross around your neck. Like maybe they've got all this stuff. And if you're saying it and the players are starting to pick up on it, then they're downloading that lore. That's what's happening.
Exactly.
It's contextual.
Yeah, exactly.
Is that the right word?
I don't know. We're both dyslexic. This is not a good time to ask them.
It's not not a good time to ask that. Contextual.
I think it is. We'll go with it is, Ben. Well done.
It's tactile. You can feel it. Do you know what else is tactile? Really nice funky dice.
Wow.
I was really looking for a way and contextual wasn't the right word. That was I'm sorry. Look, I'm a bit rusty still. Do you know what though? Speaking of tactile dice, there are actually three new sets of dice on the Dice Dungeon website.
Yes, we were talking about it.
Super funky.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've seen these. I'm going to say this wrong because again, dyslexic.
Mm-hmm.
So Ben, Dave, sorry. They are the...
Gosh. I'm ready for it. I'm here for it, Ben. I'm here for believing you. There you go.
No.
Here we go.
Every time I go,
you have a go, and then I'll have a go of it. Okay.
Metallurgic. The metallurgic mastery dice sets. I've gone red. That I don't think that metallurgic.
Where are you? I've not seen this name. Where are you seeing the main version of it?
Have you not seen these?
No, you showed me them, but I don't think I've seen that name anywhere. Where are you seeing this name?
I've just sent you.
Okay.
So you have the
Nostalgic
Silver.
Yep.
I don't know what dice you're
looking at. Oh my days, these are very pretty.
Right. The Metallurgic Silver, Gold, and Bronze sets. They are, I don't know, I was going to call them themed dice, but they're not, I wouldn't call them themed. They're kind of themed. So like the D4 is a dragon egg. Yeah, Metallurgic. I got it right. Cool.
Yeah, that's how I would say it.
The D4 is like a dragon egg. The I think very that's cool. The D12 kind of looks like a tent slash mimic. The D20 is a sphere with spikes on it. That looks like
something
you could
about
really do some
the D10 really
is that the
upsets me. Like it creeps me out in a cool way though, in like a really good way.
I was gonna say make it positive, Dave. These
no. It does. It's very like Geiger esque. Like, do you know what I mean?
Yes, I know exactly.
They are very Geiger esque. Which is very fun.
They're really cool, though. So they're all different. So they're not your standard shapes of dice, but they're all functional set of D&D dice. Go and check them out. They're available right now in silver, metal, and bronze. They're gorgeous. And, of course, the Dice Dungeon has more than just... More than just dice. There's metal, acrylic, resin. There's also books. There's accessories like bags and rolling trays and... all the good stuff that you would need to enjoy Dungeons & Dragons. And if, like Dave, you're now looking and going, I really want these dice. Oh my God, they're so pretty. Then head over to the show notes below. You'll find a link to the Dice Dungeon. You'll find the dice just by searching Metallurgic, Metallurgic, for the other dyslexics out there. I see you, homie. And you can use the code WESPEAKCOMMON to get 10% off your order. And of course, Dice Dungeon ship worldwide from here in the UK. Are you going to buy a set?
Yeah, I want these really badly.
I just want the D20. I don't care about the other sections. I really want the D20.
I like everything else more than the D20, so I'll probably give you the D20.
Are we going to go halves on some dice?
We can go halves on some dice, because
no,
I love those
chaotic
dice.
I don't, that's really
no,
chaotic.
I know. There's something about that does disturb me slightly.
Yeah. Okay, well, while you fill out your basket and put the WESPEAK common code in to get you 10% off, I'm going to talk to the wonderful listener about Describe, our other partner. Spelled D-S-C-R-Y-B. Describe is, I tell you what, it's just a treasure trove. I don't know how else to describe it. It offers thousands of scenes written by professional creative writers to paint the picture of your world. Whether it's monster spells, dialogue, or to be honest, pretty much anything you could need as a player or a DM. Yes, as a player too. They've also got a sonic library. They've got maps. They've got, God, pretty much anything. Anything that you need to make your game more immersive with less prep. Head over to Describe, DSCRYB.com, and check out the over 500 free scenes that they've got available right now for you to go and have a peruse around and use in your games. And then if you want to subscribe, you can. And you can use the code COMMON at checkout to get 10% off your monthly subscription for the first 2 years it's active. Right now, they have over 10,200 scenes active. So go and peruse.
They are great. They are great.
Literally, you can think of anything. Like, whatever you've got coming up in your next session, just search in the search bar and they'll have something for you. You'll
likely find it, yeah.
Oh my God, it's incredible. And they've got different subscription tiers too. So if you're enjoying the Cozy Lives like we are over in the UK, I feel sick for saying it like that.
What did you say?
The Cozy Lives.
What the hell does that mean?
The cost of living crisis, the Cozy
Lives. Oh, okay. No, this is
have
gross.
You not heard that?
Ben, I'm old
someone
now.
Someone unironically said
that. Is it on
to
TikTok
today?
Or is it a TikTok thing? Likely. Yes. Thank you. Yeah.
Might have originated on TikTok.
Yeah, exactly.
Just such a, anyway, such a boomer. You're not even a boomer.
I'm not even a boomer. I'm more millennial than you.
What do you mean you're more millennial? You can't be more millennial
than
someone.
You can. So,
how can you be more millennial?
Because you're like the end of the barrel millennial. You're like almost Gen Z.
The dregs of the barrel. Yeah. You're a shit weak millennial.
Yeah, you still use TikTok.
Yeah, but so does my sister, and she's 31.
Well, that's unauthorized. 32? Tell her she's not a real millennial either. The title's been taken off her.
Wow. By
she's
you.
The opposite end. She's like, she's not peak millennial like me. I'm like prime. Fuck. Peak 1992 millennial. Was prime millennial time.
Dave, when was the last time you had avocado on toast?
This morning.
Fuck, mine was yesterday. Okay,
yeah, that's what I thought.
You are more millennial than me. Damn it.
And God, I had smoked salmon with it. So
yeah, but I'm a vegan, which is more millennial.
You can have
than you.
Smoked. Yeah, that's true. But I'm still better than you, and we'll just leave it there.
Okay, fine.
Side note: I just also found on Dice an oversized D20 that's gold and it's beautiful.
Well, there you go. So, what more of an endorsement do you need than that? Okay, delivering lore in game. How else can we do it, Dave? How else can we do it?
You know what I love, Ben, and you might hate this.
Oh, go on, try me.
Is magical items that that have lore or are sentient, and which is probably more relevant in my game. Sentient weapons are a big deal in Eberron specifically, but they work differently to like just jabbering on. Sentient weapons.
What part of that did you think I wasn't going to like?
I don't know. I wasn't sure. Sometimes you don't like too quirky things.
Wow. Calling me out. Like, what? Give me an example.
I can't remember what we were talking about the other day, and you were like, no, I hate it. So I can't remember what it is now. Okay, it's going to really annoy me.
Yeah, you can tell me later.
Yeah, I can't. No, I can't remember. Probably can't remember.
Well, I think then it didn't happen. I don't love sentient magic items. But only if they're done a certain way. Like I only really like a sentient magic item if it's not like goofy as shit, because I like really grounded stories.
Yeah, I know you
so
do.
So if it's like, hi, I'm the magical glaive of killing and I'm in your head now. Like, I hate that. Whereas if it's like you find an ancient old rusty sword imbued with magic, you pick it up and you feel the emotion of rage run through you. Like, that's cool.
It.
Like,
so that's how it works. So, correct me if I'm wrong. I don't know how Faerunian lore too deep as you, because obviously you live in it.
You do.
You live in it. I live in Eberron. So in Faerun, and this is just taking away from what I've learned from, especially the main continent, so like the Sword Coasty side of it, is a lot of the ruins are dwarven, like if you go underground and stuff, right?
Sort of. Not all of them, but yeah.
Not all of them. So what I've experienced is are dwarven. In Eberron, they're mostly goblinoid, specifically, because... the goblins had like an ancient empire that was destroyed by aberrations, which is awesome straight off the bat. So in goblin lore, they were like master smiths and master storytellers. So they didn't have gods. They were just like, or like really magic users. They were just like artificers and bards. That was like the only people who used magic.
Yeah.
So you in Eberron, that's why I love the goblins so much, because they have, you have the storytelling aspect of it from the bards. And then the artificers, when they made a weapon, that weapon had its own personality but didn't really speak.
Do you mean artificers?
Yeah, artificers, yes.
Yeah, artificers, yeah.
Artificers, yes. So there's this, in the novels, there's something called the Rod of Kings, which is a... Wow. Interesting.
Sorry.
Wow.
Sorry, that was so childish.
That is so childish. This is why you're not a true millennial, Ben.
I just wasn't expecting it. Just the Rod of Kings.
Wow. We're just gonna end the episode here,
no,
I think.
No. This isn't tavern talk. We go for a full hour. Keep going.
So, are you okay? You're having a meltdown.
No, just...
I feel like we can't continue it.
No, it just caught me. It just caught me off guard. Say it again.
The Rod of Kings. No, see, this is why Ben, guys, this is so why Ben is Regs of the Barrel Millennial.
Yeah, so there's the Rod of Kings.
Yes, yeah. Which basically was passed down from kings each time. Oh my God, you need to cut like 80% of this, Ben, because this is horrendous.
Sorry, the Rod of Kings was passed down by king to king, yeah? No, keep going. I'm good.
I can't do this anymore.
The fact that I'm not allowed to laugh is what's making me laugh. So just keep going. The Rod of Kings was passed down king to king.
Right.
Yeah.
Anyway, there was a king that basically was scared. The last king of the empire basically did one.
Okay.
And disappeared with the rod.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, he was like in a cave, still alive somehow with this rod. Moving on later in the story, the current king of goblins.
Mm-hmm.
Who is remade basically during the morning? He took a section of land and claimed it as his own and created a new empire of goblins.
Right.
While there was still chaos, basically. So he was after this Rod of King because he was like, oh, it makes kings really powerful, blah, blah, blah. So then he sent people to get it. He got it back. Anyway, it made him nuts because it basically had the old school king's way of doing it, which was like just war. And it basically made him want to rage war.
I don't understand. The rod made him want to rage war.
Yes.
Right, okay.
Because it has that, like, way of thinking already imbued into it.
Right, I see, okay.
You just made that go on forever because you...
You didn't explain that the rod, what the rod's
because you threw me off like 100 times.
You just said there's the rod of kings.
Right, I feel like that entire second needs to be cut out then.
You didn't explain. No, I think no, it's fine.
No,
you didn't explain.
Awful.
What it, I'm not cutting anything. This is a,
I think
this
you
is
need
a,
to put it all.
No, this is a free form conversation
no,
podcast.
It. I absolutely hate it.
It's staying in, Dave.
That's awful.
It's staying in. You didn't explain what the rod
no.
did. So the rod takes the.
We're not getting into it anymore now then.
Person. No, I need to know now. You've set it up.
It's too late.
Okay, fine. No, I'm just gonna go off and Google Rod of Kings after this
do
episode
it.
If you don't tell
Please
me.
Do.
Okay, well, if I get a virus, that's on you. So in Faerun, I could be wrong, but I don't think there's a specific this is a weird tangent. I don't think there's a specific way that you make sentient items, though they all sort of come about in different ways. But there are different types of sentient items, so you can have the ones that talk to you, which I don't like.
Yeah.
Personally. You can have items that have souls trapped inside them. That's cool. That's different in my mind because
yeah.
the item isn't sentient. It's got a soul in it. It's got a person in it.
Yeah.
And you have the ones that kind of communicate in emotions or they do specific things. So, you can have a magic item expouse lore in that kind of way. I also feel like another way is just through weaponry and items in general. So like, you find a sword in an old dungeon and it's carved and crafted in a way that you don't recognize. Now it's not a magic sword. Maybe it's got the cleave property or something on it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got a special kind of symbol in it and a special kind of metalwork. And they go, I want to learn about it. And you go, okay, well, you know, make a investigation or a history check or something to try and work out if you recognize it. And maybe they fail that, or maybe it's a really hard check. So they have to go and find a blacksmith and take it to them, and they look at it and go, "Oh wow, this is a Netheril sword. Like that's amazing." And they can then tell them the lore about this weapon, and they can say like, "Oh, it was made this way specifically because of this thing," and that can give you in-world lore that, if you're a good DM and you're clever, you can link into your story and the overarching plot. You know?
Yeah,
so
well,
maybe
it's
a special sword made to kill a certain beast, which is what they're going after, or something like that.
Yeah, it was in Tyranny where you guys were talking about the armor that was in Mithril Hall made out of dragons.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that was so interesting. Like, and if you found, imagine if you just came across that. Like, the amount of, like, lore just in that is nuts.
And it's like things like Mithril is, it's lighter than normal metal.
Yeah.
Right? So, Dritzto Erden gets mithril scimitars and they're light and he can do more with them, and it's like the dwarves have this special way of crafting mithril into this lighter metal, right?
They're the only ones who can do it. Like, there's so another thing in goblin stuff, there's a in Eberron there's a metal called Biesk, which is like purpley greeny cool metal that only really goblins knew how to craft properly, that has basically powers against aberrations. Like, it's powerful when it goes against monsters.
Yeah. This is all stuff that, like, it's just kind of world lore, which is a really good thing to be able to continuously drip feed into games, because it makes your world feel alive and real and lived in. And especially if you're running, maybe, you know, you've got a player like Dave who doesn't play in Faerun and you're running a Forgotten Realms adventure, or maybe you're running a homebrew world with players who haven't been there before. And so you're kind of having to set up with them constantly, like, this is what the world's like, this is what that is, this is who these people are. So it's a good skill to be able to seamlessly drip feed bits of lore like that to make the world feel alive. The trick comes to making it relevant to your campaign and how to make it a part of the adventure.
Yeah.
Because you don't, and there's a bit of a trick to making those two things distinct as well, because you don't want players to go, oh, it's just another bit of lore, it doesn't matter, if it's important.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
You've always got the backup of, okay, we'll make a history check and see if you remember, and I'll just tell you as the DM. That's always there, but it's nice if there's that satisfying moment as a DM when the players go,
investment.
Oh my god, that's this thing that we need that does this, that, and whatever, and they work out on their own through the in-story stuff. That's what you're looking for.
Yeah. It's super satisfying each way. Like, I really enjoy as a player learning new things you don't know about the world, but it's also satisfying realizing you know that, and you can, like, oh, right? It's like, it's really interesting both ways. And yeah, it's nice as a DM doing both ways, because I just love providing lore to people.
So one that I'm really struggling with right now then is the, at the end of Tomb.
Yep.
There is the Soulmonger and what it's for and what it's doing.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that it's doing it to. And the thing that it's doing it to is a thing that I want to set up, but there's kind of no way to set it up. Yeah, thing, exactly. And then there's Azerac, and he has his plan, right? And it's like, okay, well, how do I... Like, he's not going to appear and tell you his plan. Like, that's dumb.
yeah, and by the way...
By the way, here's why all this stuff's been happening, you know. But I kind of want to pay that off a little bit. And
yeah.
So, you know, the last thing I want is for you guys to... Let's do a better example that we can talk more about. Let's say your players are going up against a vampire, right?
Mm-hmm.
But they don't know what a vampire is. I know it's hard to believe vampires are like things we've known for hundreds mm-hmm. of years in the real world as well, but they've never heard of a vampire before. They don't know what it is, right? So the players are doing an adventure, a small quest in the village. People are dying. They're finding people with holes in their necks. They're finding people... Mm-hmm. who are being brought up as zombies who don't have any blood in them and stuff like this. And, you know, I don't know, go stereotypical vampire, young girls are going missing or whatever. And it's always at night.
People in graves have gone now. Like, they look like there's drug up from the inside.
Now, to you and I, who know what a vampire is, we're like, it's Count Drac. Vampire. He's here. Vampire. Yeah,
it's your boy.
Boys.
Strahd.
Yeah. Strahd's about. Lock up Tatiana.
Yeah.
To someone who doesn't know what a vampire is, they're going to be like, oh, I don't know. What's this? What does this mean? What's that? I don't know. The last thing you want is for them to walk into the, I don't know, cemetery mm-hmm. and just see a guy in a cloak and be like, it's just a guy.
It's a guy.
And then him to bare his fangs and they go, I don't get it. What's causing all those puncture wounds? Like, it's not...
What's this guy doing? Why is he doing this? Has he got a tiny knife? Like, two tiny knives? What's happening?
Is he stabbing them with a two-pronged fork? I don't get it.
Yeah.
What's happening to all their blood? He's drinking it. Like, you want them to pick it up.
You see him with a cup and a tiny fork.
So how do you get that across without just telling them? You want them to pin it all together. And it's trickier the more abstract the monster,
mm-hmm.
which is exactly the issue I'm having. If you know what's at the end of Tomb.
Interesting.
Yeah. And so I've set it up in ways like, I mean, when players have, I mean, we've got two players who are connected to the Soulmonger now because they've been born.
I feel like I've not seen my character, but I've heard you describe this creature slightly, I think, if it's the same thing.
Yeah, so I'm happy to kind of clarify a couple of things with you here now, because...
So spoilers for TOA, right?
Well, yes and no, I suppose. Okay. This is slightly my interpretation of how to show it.
Okay, interesting.
So the Soulmonger's a device. The Soulmonger is feeding something, right? You would have been able to work that out by now as a player. And the last thing I wanted was you guys to walk into the final room where the Soulmonger is. It's not the final room, but walk into that room and see the Soulmonger and the thing that it's feeding and be like, that's gross. What is it? I wanted you to be like, oh, that's the thing. That's the thing that's being fed. So we have two characters who died and were brought back to life by the hag who are connected to the Soulmonger. And when a character dies, I give them a little death scene where I foreshadow a bit of a Serac. Some of them have heard his voice. Some of them mm-hmm. have seen his like silhouette. Wesley's character Nevin was kind of transported, in air quotes, his mental mind connected with his soul, which is trapped within the monger. And, there he had a conversation with an entity that presented itself as him. It came up and appeared as Nevin because Nevin wouldn't be able to understand or perceive its visage. And it kind of spoke to him and gave some info and said, like, why are you here? But instead of the creature going, why are you in the Soulmonger? Why can't I eat you? I eat everything in the Soulmonger. It's doing this for me. Why can't I eat you? Which is boring. Yeah. It went, why are you awake? And he went, I'm sorry, what? And he went, why are you like, why can we do this? Why can we talk? Why are you here? Yeah. And why can't I absorb you? And he went, I'm sorry, what? He went,
basically, why are you not my food right now? Yeah.
He went, you're really bugging me. Because if you're awake, I'm awake, and I just want to sleep and eat. So what's going on? And it got really angry. And
which is interesting for the form it is currently in, because that's very like child-esque in way of thinking.
Oh, Dave, have you just picked up on something?
Yes, I have.
Oh, would you like to theorize right now? I don't mind. There's another place to listen to the show.
I don't know for sure, but I think this is either some sort of weird, possibly like a child god, or possibly a weird a Serac like form he wants to make. I don't, to become. I'm not sure. It's one of those two things for me.
And this, ladies and gentlemen, is how you successfully deliver lore in game. Because Dave is stumbling in the right areas of the forest, mm-hmm. and he's stumbling about exactly where I want him to. He's not mm-hmm. quite sure,
yeah.
but he thinks he knows, and he's heading towards the daisies. Yeah. and that's what it's about, right? It's about finding those interesting ways to say things. So you're saying, oh, it's kind of childlike, and I'm trying to, that's what I'm trying to put across to you, right? I'm trying to put across this infantile mind.
Yeah.
So what do infants do? They sleep, they eat, and they get angry.
Mm-hmm.
They cry.
Yeah.
So have what
you
is
seen,
this thing?
Sorry. You know what it reminded me of? Have you seen Akira, the like 80s anime?
No.
Okay. So in Akira, there's these like kids who have psychic powers, and the way you talked is the way they think. Like, it's very like, you need to watch it, but people who will know what I'm talking about, like the way you delivered that is how they were discussing with each other, and like it's very like childlike, and kids can be mean and like creepy as well. Like the way some things kids say, I'm just like, what's like,
Dave, I don't want to put you off because I know you've got a young one on the way, but kids are the fucking worst, man.
Yeah,
they're loud, they're weird, they're mean. Kids are mean. Do you remember being a child?
So this is the thing. So fun fact.
I would have pushed myself as a child into oncoming traffic.
For sure. I'm not doing that to my children. I love my children.
Don't do that.
My child is great.
I wouldn't do that to any children.
No. but before children go to school, they are literally pretty much like a psychopath. They are very self-centered. No, this is genuinely real. Like, this is genuinely real.
I just love hearing you say it.
They very selfish. They think solely for themselves until they realize other people have emotions too.
We had in the UK, for our non-UK listeners, a series of shows called The Secret Life of the...
yes.
And they did like Secret Life of the Zoo, Secret Life of the Doctor, whatever, Secret Life of a Vet. And they had one called Secret Life of a Infant or Secret Life of the School or something like that, where they put a load of kids, like young kids who were just coming to preschool or nursery or whatever you want to call it. Yeah, preschool for Americans, nursery. And they just filmed them and watched them, and they had like child psychology specialists saying like, this kid's just understood what empathy is for the first time.
Yeah.
Like, watch this.
It's wild.
And it's so interesting to watch like a child suddenly go, oh my God, I've just hurt someone's feelings. And then like cry because they don't know what to do with this emotion. And it's like, it's not fun to watch a child cry.
Well, no, but it's interesting to realize that.
Yeah. Like to watch them learn empathy is amazing.
It's nuts, yeah.
But yeah, like we've gone off topic again, but that's like, that's what I was trying to put across. I was trying to send you this kind of vibe of, hey,
no, that 100%
like
works.
Like a big baby. So a
big old scary baby.
Big old scary baby that's going to kill you later. And wants to eat you. They eat, they sleep, and they cry is what babies do.
Yeah.
So this thing was angry that it couldn't eat and it couldn't sleep.
Yeah.
Boom.
I'm going to send you the clip of Akira after so you can see what I mean. You'll be like, yes, that's exactly what I was going for.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
I look forward to that.
Yeah.
I look forward to that. So, I mean, look, I mean, there's a kind of cryptic example because I didn't want to say to Dave, hey, it's this thing, go and Google it. But
no, you did a great job of that.
Hopefully that gives an example of like what I'm trying to say is like, don't just think of it as how do I put across the lore of this kingdom? It's like, how do I put across the relevant lore for this adventure and stuff like that? And it's just about being sly, subtle, creative.
Yeah.
But also obvious.
Yeah.
And that's hard.
It is difficult. I did it in the last session. I did. Where I foreboded the...
Foreshadowed.
Foreshadowed. foreboding afterwards.
Forebodingly foreshadowed.
Yeah. The arrival of the Illithids, because I had a Githyanki who was the captain of the ship. And they were like, we went along and they were traveling, blah, blah, blah. They'd been together a while. And I said, he's got a weird scar on his hand. And they were like, what? And I'm like, yeah, it's like a round circle and then another circle within. And they were like, what? And they were like, yeah, it's raised and it looks really bad. They were like, can I do a medis check? And I'm like, it's not normally raised like this. Something's aggravated it. Something's irritating it. Mm-hmm. Anyway, it comes to the point where more and more things start to, weird things start to happen with this. And Chris kind of clocked it straight away as like, it's like a suction cup, like a tentacle.
Yeah.
And he was like, what? And I'm like, I don't know. You don't really know that yet. Anyway, it got worse and worse. And he eventually got infected with a tadpole.
So was the circle a suction from a tentacle coming up, or was it like where something had?
It was where something he'd been attacked in the past. And basically, he had a tadpole in him that was.
I always go, because we're now talking about something completely differently. Mm-hmm. Hey, maybe this is a teaser for an upcoming episode of Legends and Lore. Mm-hmm. With Ceramorphosis, I've seen over the years, DMs use different ways of implementing it. So like the tadpole goes in, they eat the tadpole, or they accidentally, the tadpole borrows into their skin. I'm an advocate for the traditional, air quotes, way of Ceramorphosis.
What is traditional?
The Illithid peels open your eyelids and drops the tadpole in your eye, and it comes in and it like slivers in behind your eye and then goes up into your brain.
That's very fun. Yeah. I did the burrowing method.
If you want to see a visual representation of that, because why wouldn't you? The Baldur's Gate 3 intro shows it really, really gruesome.
Have you seen the mimic potion art that someone did?
Maybe.
I'll find it for you. But anyone who hasn't seen that, just Google health potion mimic. That's the most messed up thing I've ever seen in my life.
Is it when they're drinking it?
So it's the mimic and they drink it, and it's like the eggs. They drink all the eggs.
Yeah, and then they hatch inside.
They like hatch inside and look them all and come out. So good.
Oh, it's grim.
It's so cool. I love it. I love a bit of body horror.
Mate, I love when D&D characters get scary, because don't get me wrong, I love goofy D&D. We're really off topic now, but I love goofy D&D, but I prefer grounded, like realistic, like oh my god, I might die D&D. And so when I run goblins, or when I bring an owlbear in, which are two really iconic,
generic
monsters, they're like, oh, it's a goblin, or oh, it's an owlbear. I make that shit scary. Like, it's just an owlbear. Well, let's watch as it targets one of you, mauls you to death, and then drags your body away and ignores the rest of you because it wants to feed you to its babies.
Owlbears are brutal, especially at low level. They are brutal.
Would you want to fight a bear in real life? No, thank you. Let alone an owlbear.
No, well, I'm just going to peck your eyes out while it's doing it. It's
terrifying.
Yeah.
So yeah, I love that scary stuff.
Me too.
We've gone so off topic now, I don't think we can even get back to track, and we're getting to time, so I hope that's been a helpful episode.
I apologize.
Episode. No, I think that was a good episode. I had a lot of fun. And at the end of the day, Dave, the most important thing is that you and I have fun.
Yeah,
we're the ones sat here for an hour and a half recording.
An hour and a half? Has it been an hour and a half?
Wow. Since we started talking, nearly, yeah.
Jeez. I came out of nowhere.
Hour 15. Mate, time flies when you are having fun. And you always have fun when you're talking to me.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes.
Okay, well, look, I'm going to let you go because you need to mentally prepare yourself for tomorrow's session.
I'm very scared.
We're going to have a very heartfelt role play, and then you're going to enter the tomb. And I'm actually... Wesley and Ray need to have a big chat in character, and I've said to both of them, I don't want you to just enter the tomb. Like, you got to get past the door.
Yeah.
So, you know, let's bear that in mind. Let's not make the whole session.
Because they will go book it for ages, which is good.
Which is
but also
good.
We want to crack on.
Well, I just want to kill one of you.
It's going to be fucking me, Ben, and I'm going to be raging.
Do you know what? I was thinking about this earlier, because there's four of you, right? And I was like, okay, who I really want to kill. I don't want to kill someone, but it would be really cool if someone died in the first session in the tomb. Just to really cement how scary it is. Or even just at some point. So like it would be good for to have a death at some point. I was like, well, who would be the one that I would want to die? Like, I was like, okay, out of all of the characters, let me pick my favorites. Who would I want to die?
Oh God.
I don't want to kill any of you.
No.
I really don't. Like, I want one of you to die.
Mm-hmm. But at the same time.
But at the same time, I don't want you. I love these characters. And God.
I'm so scared. Ben, I can't even tell you how scared I am of it. I'm horrified.
Well, go in knowing that I, as your DM, don't want to kill you.
But at the same time, I want you to not hold back.
Oh, I'm not going to hold back.
Good.
I'm not going to. Don't worry. If you die, you die. Like, I'm not holding back.
Yeah.
But my ideal solution or situation would be that all the way through the 6 levels of this tomb, you are constantly on edge. And constantly like at risk of dying and come close a few times. And then a couple of you die in the fight. That would be the ideal situation.
Oh my God. A couple of you die in the fight. Ben, you can't say things like that.
Sorry.
That's horrifying. I'm truly horrified.
You are literally the Rogue One team in this adventure. So
I am so scared. I'm genuinely so scared.
I can't wait.
I do not want Cassius to die. He's so young, Ben.
He's a wee baby. He's a wee baby.
No.
All right, let's wrap this up here. Thanks for listening to the episode. If you want to find links to our wonderful partners, they're in the description below. If you want to support this wonderful conversation and more of it, and maybe not me, but you want to support Dave and Chris and Tam Talk, then the best way to do it is to head over to the We Speak Common Patreon. There's a link below. It gets you a couple of different things. There's a few different tiers. They're all quite cheap, but the main thing to talk about is the unrivaled access you get to the Discord server. The We Speak Common Discord is free to enter. You can find that link below too. Come and join the community, get involved with Project Civitas, talk to other members of the audience, but also just people who love D&D and all other RPGs, your Pathfinder, Call of Cthulhu, Monster of the Week, all that stuff. We're talking about everything over in the server. We've got an event coming up on
Sunday
as we're recording this, but it's not going to go out this week, so we'll have more events
we'll
coming
have
up
the event.
we will have had an event, but you can come and join and get involved for the next one.
We have events all the time, so
we do and we're actually filling out the calendar now, so come and get involved, check out what's going on, and if you want to support, do it via Patreon, and if you don't want to give us money because free it's internet fair. Content then share us with some D&D people in your life. Go, hey, would you like to listen to a cool podcast? Here you go. Here's a show called Tavern Talk. And there's some other shows on there too. Then, do that. Cheers. Okay. it's been a while since I've plugged in it. Yeah. So that was, it's fine. Dave, thank you so much for joining me and talking about lore.
Yeah, it was really fun.
Oh, I'm glad. All right, love you lots. Have a good rest. Bye-bye. Get ready to die tomorrow.
Yep, great, thanks.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the We Speak Common Podcast Network. If you enjoyed the show, be sure to leave a review on your platform of choice and share us with a friend or D&D group near you. If you'd like to directly support the network and the production of new shows like the one you heard today, head to the description of this episode or our social media pages for a link to our Patreon page. You can connect with the show on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at We Speak Common. The network theme is Street Dancing by Timecrawler 82 and is held under a Creative Commons 4.0 license. You can find it on the Free Music Archive.